I guess I'll answer that and I'll get to it. And I guess I wanted to start with in terms of tools that I'm seeking, as everyone else here has shared, just community. And one of the things that I've really cherished over the last couple of weeks that's really been a gift is how much contact I've been in with some of the people I cherish most on the planet. Text messages or phone calls from someone I haven't talked to in a year, but we're like, oh, it's getting rough in here. We need each other. How are you? How are you dealing with your like queer family and second parent adoption? And like, how are you gonna get through this? We have 2 months. What are you gonna do? And helping each other out and being a resource for each other like that. And then also kind of in a broader sense, knowing that I'm part of like a broader community of kind of resistance to everything that Trump stands for, which is really swelling across the country. The water protectors at Standing Rock, the Movement for Black Lives, put out their vision a couple months ago, and they're moving towards that, and it's really exciting. Undocumented people across the country have mobilized actions and are preparing deportation resistance. Muslim people are opening their mosque and welcoming the community in. Students are walking out. Rural communities are building safety plans. Queer and trans folks are offering life-saving medical and legal support. And I know in my community, a lot of the trans suicide line have experienced a lot more calls in the last 2 weeks, and so I signed myself up to be a support to my community. Another tool, or just something that I'm trying to do, is write letters to my family, and I'm starting with letters, and this kind of taps into what Sean was getting to, because I have a practice. I'm a Buddhist, and I have a practice of right speech. And so there's three questions in right speech that we're asked to consider when we say anything. Is it true? Is it kind? And is it necessary? And if it's not a yes to all of those, then it's recommended by, sages for thousands of years, to not speak. And then also it's recommended not to tell lies, not to speak harshly, not to engage in idle chatter, just kind of like musing about, who heard what cabinet member said this or that, which can be really damaging. And so writing letters for me to my Trump supporting family members has been a way to communicate with them in a way that I feel resourced and safe, in a way where I can express myself and be vulnerable, establish connection, ask them questions about their lives, really honestly curious, like what is it that you're hoping for in this administration? And I want to hear that from you, and I want to hear about their lives, and really not shaming or vilifying them, because that cuts off connection. That's not going to open doors, and that's not gonna allow for their hearts or minds to ever be transformed if they're getting shamed by me or any other liberal person in the family, anyone who voted a different way. And I guess kind of along those lines, getting back to Crystal's query about yoga communities and how we can engage in spiritual bypass, is trying to have conversations with people who this is like a wake-up moment. Kind of referring back to what Chelsea said in the beginning, right? Like, some of us don't have an option to not know that this is the reality of our lives. It's not a secret to a lot of people. A lot of people, queer folks, undocumented folks, people of color have not had to have a wake-up moment. But I think it's really important for us to have compassion for those people who are being woken up right now, and to not cut them off, to not shame them, to not be like, why aren't you woke already? Damn it. But to bring them in, right? And that's something that Carrie was talking about, of how do we bring them along? And I frankly think that's something that social justice movements are not really good at. But I'm hopeful that we can use our tools within yoga to engage that. And I guess along those lines too, one of my friends, Lex Huron in Minneapolis, who's a great trans activist, talks a lot about being conflict ready, which is to anticipate resistance or pushback or challenge, you know, from people in our yoga communities, from people in our yoga classes, from our yoga teachers, from our family, from whoever, and to try to be grounded and kind when we respond to them. I was in a yoga class the Friday after the election, and the teacher was sharing some things about, you know, how her kids reacted to the election, and it was really sweet, and they were mostly afraid that their friends were going to move away. And I was thinking about that through the practice and moving that through my body and meditation, and she referenced that again at the end of class, and I felt like I couldn't be silent anymore, because I know some people have the option and the privilege to maybe move away, but also people are going to be sent away. Like, some of their friends might leave because their father's incarcerated or because their mother got deported. And so I said that out loud. And someone in the yoga community, someone in the class, it was a class of like 40 people, was like, "Don't say that." Kind of hushing me. And in the moment, all I said was, "It's true." And the teacher validated me, like, "Yeah, that's already happening. It's not, you know, gonna start happening now. It's been happening." But it indicated to me that, like, that's actually a really great opportunity in that yoga class to have a broader conversation. And we need to. And that's kind of what Carrie was talking about. We need to scoop those people up, the people that are in the middle that, like, have some feelings of, like, something's wrong here, but to move them towards action. The last thing I want to say, responding to Sean's query, is it can be really compelling to speak from a place of anger and to, you know, not want to just play nice. And sometimes that's important, for sure. And it's probably never going to build relationships, or it's going to cause harm to a relationship, which sometimes maybe that's a casualty that you're willing to have. And so that's a consideration to make. And I guess another thing connecting to Sean is setting boundaries. Like, sometimes it's not the right time to go home or to have conversations with within your yoga class or community or with your neighbors. And I think, and this is something that I talk to my queer students a lot about, is yes, setting boundaries, but also considering, where are those boundaries coming from? Are they coming from a place of love, love for yourself and love for your community, love for people who are directly affected? Or is it coming from a place of fear? Like, I don't want to encounter that, so I'm gonna just take space. And to really grapple with that. And I think that's a really spiritual inquiry, and that's something that our yoga practice leads us towards. So now I'm gonna open it up for questions. And Laura, I'm not really sure how to do that, but maybe you are confident in that.
Yeah, people can do a couple things. They can either post questions in the question and answer, or they can raise a hand. And if somebody raises a hand and wants to speak, what I'll do is temporarily promote them to a panelist so that we can hear them, if they're okay with that. And if not, they can type the question into the chat or the Q&A box.
Well, Laura, perhaps while you're figuring out raising hands and stuff like that, I can pull together a few questions from the chat box. And this is for any of you, Carrie, Sean, or Chelsea.
Yeah, can I just check while you scroll? I just want to respond to sort of like this conversation that we've been having in the chat on the side. Hi, Lisa. Lisa was asking about, well, what happens when we engage and we're the ones shamed and vilified? And I think Laura was chiming in too, like, how do we tell the difference between engaging and bringing people along and it not being safe for us to do that, right? So I wanna like lift up that, like, you get to determine for yourself in any given moment whether or not you feel like you're in the position to do that, or what you might need to engage, or how you might need to call others in to engage on your behalf. That's one of the things that we've been trying to do for one another in community, or how you might just need to like not engage, right? Like that's an option for some of us in a particular time or moment. And I just wanna, you know, my dad, my birth father stands on the opposite side of the aisle, like way opposite. And I engaged him for many, many a year, and it was precarious and challenging and difficult and ugly at times. And I lost my relationship with him for 4 years because of it. And so I've come back around to being in relationship with him and choosing to actually not engage at that level, because I decided that my relationship with him and his humanity was more important than my political rightness. And so I think there are ways too, right, where we can be discerning about what we choose and how we want to be in relationship with people we love. And that should inform how we engage with them, because I think sometimes our boldness, trumps. Sometimes our commitment, and I know a lot of us really feel this, gets ahead of our relationship and our commitment to our relationship as human beings on the planet, right? So like how, and this to me is like the greatest practice is, how do we balance our commitment to relationship, right, with our need to be right or our need to change minds, or right, like how do we keep those two things in balance so that we can stay in relationship and move the conversation forward? Some of these conversations are going to take a really long time. Like by Sunday after your Thanksgiving holiday, we don't expect you to have changed all of the minds of your family. But what does it look like to be in healthy engagement, right? And to feel out that edge for you and to take care of yourself at the same time. So I just wanted to add that, because I know that is a nuance and I think it's a really good point.
And to know that we're not always going to be there for someone's transformation, that we could plant the seeds and they won't bloom for like 4 more years.
Thank you for that.
Or maybe next week. I'm seeing a few questions here for everyone. And I don't know who wants to answer this. Dana Lane asks, how do you handle a family member who insists you uninvited family from Christmas because of how they voted? So I'm just going to call on you. Chelsea, how do you think you would respond to that family member? How would you engage your practice?
And I'm trying to look for that exact question, or can you repeat it for me? Who is that from?
Yep, it's not in the chat box, it's in the Q&A.
Okay, can you repeat that?
Yep, how do you handle a family member who insists you uninvited family from Christmas because of how they voted? So how do you deal with people's defensiveness around your choices?
Right. So again, I go back to, let me back all the way up. First and foremost, I think that there is this feeling, at least, and I'll use I statements, and this feeling that I feel overwhelmed sometimes when trying to articulate something that is just like the fabric of my existence at this point in life, from teachings, from understandings, from relationships. And so when I feel that there's a moment where I feel that that's being compromised in relationship with other people, like I step back for a second to, again, like a lot of the things that you all are suggesting of like just reflecting on, okay, so what is my intention behind this? Can I have a conversation that will not be damaging to me, and just kind of figuring out, okay, is this worth the relationship, or is this worth my own liberation within being heard and understood? And how does this affect me going forward in the future? Because in this way, it may be about the election. In another situation, it may be about something else where I want to go back to those undergirding things that may not have been addressed in our families. And I think that these are opportunities, like Rumi will say, like the wound is sometimes where the light is allowed in. I'm completely paraphrasing, but just knowing that these things come up to be healed a lot of times. And I know that's a very yogic and optimistic way to see things, but it's real to me. Like if we truly believe in our practice, it's real. And I think for anyone who is willing to take that risk and put themselves in a space of vulnerability to see if transformation can happen, not just for the person they're talking to, but more specifically for themselves, because the transformation for me happens when I hear my voice. I'm still learning to use my voice. And so when I am resisting my usual go-to, which is to be silent, to be passive, for me, my work is to actually say something. So if a family member wants to go there with that, I would definitely set up an opportunity for us to have conscious dialogue. I'm really a fan of processes in restorative justice with circles, and that is taken specifically from indigenous communities. I think there's a lot to learn from marginalized communities. I think there was a lot of talk initially when Black folks got the answer about the election in terms of who won, that there was a lot of energy of like, welcome, we welcome you. We've been experiencing this as absolutely at different intersections of different ways that we've been marginalized. But it's just like, yeah. So I think it's important, as Sean even said, being at Standing Rock, we have to listen to communities and individuals who have been experiencing trauma and oppression for hundreds and hundreds of years. There is a lot to be learned in those spaces. And so I know I'm going off a little bit on the question, but I think that it's important for us when we do feel that overwhelm, that hopelessness, that we remember that this isn't new. Trauma and oppression is not new. Struggles around power is not new. And people have been putting in place practices that have learned how to use this as fuel for us to be liberated individually and collectively. So my go-tos, and I have them sitting right here. I had to dust them off the shelf. Bell Hooks, Sisters of the Yams. Yes, it's specifically to Black women, but there's a lot to be learned. I went back to Salvation by Bell Hooks, like just learning what have people already, James Baldwin, like all of these people who have been experiencing and talking about and unpacking and understanding oppression in a way that can be applied to what we're going through, regardless of our background right now, and using those as blueprints and adjusting them along the way.
Thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Sean, I'm gonna throw the next question to you. It's from Kiko Eret. She says, there is much talk of uniting women in response to this election. How can we use this galvanizing and raising of women to the forefront to stand for all the other voices that are not being heard right now? Women have a unique opportunity to hold energy for the movement to stand up for our communities. How can we best join together with this already growing movement?
It's all about participation and a willingness to hold yourself accountable, to be willing to go out into community and not to reinvent the wheel, but to look in your own backyard for organizations that are already doing work, that are already mobilizing. They're all over the place. And sometimes we can get overwhelmed or think, well, who am I? Or not really know where we best fit. You can't wait to be invited in. Not now is a time to actually go forward and see what's already being done and then align yourself there. There are just so many things that can be done. I would really highly recommend, there's going to be a march on Washington on the 21st. It's a women's march, but I think it's expanding much broader than that. And I don't even think it's just in DC. I think it's in New York as well. Carrie might know more of those details. But that might be one way to be able to unite with the larger collective. But I think it's an essential thing that we need to do right now as women, as people in every community, to band together and be proactive in our intention to be able to be heard, to speak louder, to fight harder, but to love bigger. I think what's also really important for me is I can't help but want to look at what's happening in this election very symbolically. Donald Trump is an archetype. So is Hillary Clinton. So is Bernie Sanders. There are all these archetypes that reflect aspects of our own self. What's been excavated is some of the deep fear, the misogyny, the sexism, the racism, the xenophobia, the transphobia, homophobia, bias, prejudice, discrimination that has always existed, but has been, for some of us, a little bit polished off, buried, you know, covered over a little bit. And I think what has really come to the surface is how deeply rooted these biases are and the impact that they are having on so many people. And this is a good thing. We can't heal what we can't see. And unless something gets ripped up from the roots, we can't transform it. So if anything good has come out of this very polarized, very divisive election, it's been that. And it's given me an opportunity to look at my own bias, my own prejudice, all my own isms, because I'd be a liar if I said that they didn't exist. I still have a lot of healing myself to do. And if I spot it in someone like Donald Trump, then I know that I must also have aspects of it. And as a woman, it gives me a chance to really identify it and transform it. For example, in one of the debates, I heard Donald Trump talking. I was certainly paying attention, but I was packing. So I was multitasking. And he said something that I found ridiculous. And out of my mouth, I said out loud, I fucking hate him. And I remember my partner just kind of glancing at me because it was such a surprising thing for me to say. And I held his gaze for a moment, I said it again. I said, I fucking hate him. Like, I couldn't believe that that was the language that I would use. And I realized once again, I am the problem. I'm hating him for his hate. And so I have to recognize that if I want Donald Trump to change, then I've got to unpack in myself all the things that I say I cannot stand about him. And maybe if I can change that within myself and align myself with other people, whether it's women or people in the queer community or people of color or a mix of all of it, but I'm taking accountability for my own bias, then maybe change can happen that's authentic, that's grounded in something that of true integrity. So that's how I intend to look at this election. Every time I get outraged, is there something that's being reflected back to me that I need to check in with myself? And who are the people I want to align myself with who can hold me accountable lovingly and help call me up? Those are the people I want to be around. And so for the person who asked the question, if for you it's being in women groups like that, I would start by checking out this Women's March on the 21st, because within that, there are going to be so many different organizations coming together that you might find one that you really, that you feel comfortable with, safe with, that aligns with your particular values. I think that's the way I'm going to answer that question.